Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Go. Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Here in Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our hosts, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Two great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Good afternoon. Good evening. Welcome to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, editor of Tiger Rag, with Tiger Rag executive editor and financial expert Todd Horn. Read the latest issue of Tiger Rag, the money issue. Show me the money. That's what that magazine does. That's what that issue does. And our great producer, Andre, how do you pronounce his last name, Todd?
Champagne.
Champagne. Champagne. Say it for us, Andre.
But it is champagne.
Well, it's hot outside. It's getting to be baseball season, NCAA tournament season.
Does that mean the baseball team's gonna start playing?
Maybe the Tigers play tonight at 6:30 against Creighton. Creighton's from Omaha. Maybe the Omaha vibe will rub off on the Tigers, and they'll start hitting the ball. They've never played Creighton. That's amazing. They've been in the same stadium as Creighton quite a few times at Rosenblatt. And
have you ever in your long illustrious career covering,
in which I got fired twice, but go ahead.
Covering LSU baseball? No, really. You mean you've written the authoritative book on LSU baseball under Skip Bertman? You've been covering baseball since the beginning of time, and so what I want to know is
he's three years younger than me.
That's right. So, serious question, serious. Have you ever seen a more talented group of players slump as badly as this team has against inferior competition?
Maybe probably not with that last part with the RPI. The teams they've played are really low in RPI, and that's why LSU is really low in RPI now. But I can tell you the 2001 Tigers, the 2000 Tigers that won the national championship, they started off 6-5 and they got swept at home by Houston. And Houston was, they're better than like Northeast, but they weren't a baseball Northeastern, but they weren't like a baseball power, but they were pretty good. But they got killed in all three games. And I remember talking to Skip after that, and they were 6-5 and I had put all the stats of those losses in there, and they all reverted back to like the worst teams of the 70s for LSU. And I go in the dugout and Skip goes, "You think we suck, don't you?" And he was laughing and everything. And, they had a couple of little slumps that year, but nothing like this, you know. This is kind of strange because they're just not hitting other than Jake Brown and Derek Curiel.
What was Jay's comment last week about batting?
He said the take is our best friend.
We're doing better when we don't swing than
exactly
when we swing, or something to that
effect. Yeah, and that's amazing because the Notre Dame coach, when they were off to an 8-0 start, he said that he'd never seen a team do so well not swinging, you know, because you kind of set the pitcher up to get your right pitch. But what LSU has not been doing that they did do when they went 8-0 is they're not hitting mistakes, according to Jay Johnson, and they're not taking advantage of situations, and they're just not hitting overall. I mean, they're like around 200, 210 over the last several games.
I think it's 206, actually.
Yeah. They just look a little snake bit because sometimes they hit it well and it gets caught, but But, you know, that happens every now and then. This has happened for a series of games. And it's worrisome because if they're hitting like that against these lower teams, you know, when you go into the SEC, you're thinking, uh-oh, it's going to be like 2024 all over again. But the thing is, they really don't play an SEC team that's tearing it up until, like, you know, according to the paper right now, until Ole Miss, like later in the season. Vanderbilt's got a worse RPI than LSU. They're 10-7. So, and it can turn around real quick. But we're going to talk to Kendall Rogers about that at 6:20. He's going to join us, the national baseball writer from D1 Baseball. Then we're going to switch over to the situation with men's basketball to see if Matt McMahon can survive or not. Rudy Macklin, member of the greatest LSU basketball team ever, 45-year anniversary of the 1980-81 Tigers. Rudy's going to join us at 6:30. Then we're going to have Todd Walker on at 7 to talk about LSU's hitting slump. And I think Todd Walker had like maybe one slump in his career, and it was early in Omaha in 93, and he busted out of it like with a grand slam against A&M. But we'll talk to Todd about hitting. He's an expert analyst for ESPN and the SEC Network. And then at 7:30, we're going to talk a little NCAA tournament women's basketball with Reed Darcy of the Advocate.
So the women's basketball is up to number 5, so they're just missing a number 1 seed when the brackets come out according to the rankings. But they played really well again against South Carolina.
Yeah.
I think they've proven that they, you know, could beat them if Mulkey could ever outcoach Dawn Staley.
It's starting to remind me of 1986 with the men when LSU lost 3 times that season to Kentucky. Back then they played twice in a regular season. Then they lost a close game to them in the SEC tournament. Then in Atlanta, in the Southeast Regional, Don Redden and Ricky Blanton beat them. And LSU went to the Final Four. Yeah, Todd's imitating Ricky Blanton running down the court like a stalled airplane, like a winged airplane. But Ricky was great in that game, Ricky and Don. And the late, great Don Redden. And that was one of Kentucky's biggest NCAA tournament losses ever because they were like 31-5.
Yeah.
They were number 1 seed. Everybody thought they were going to win the national championship. And Eddie Sutton lost to Daddy Dale. And Daddy Dale also beat Eddie Sutton in the regional to get to the 81 Final Four.
He beat
Arkansas in the Sweet 16 game,
right?
And then they beat Wichita State to get to the Final Four.
Right, that's correct.
And that was in New Orleans. And Rudy just tore up the place in the Superdome. And if he doesn't hurt his shooting finger, who knows? LSU might have beat Indiana in the national semifinal.
Indiana was always LSU's nemesis in those early years.
Yeah. Well, that was the first one, and then they lost to him in 87 in the regional final. And if Dale had won that game, and he wins that game if Fess Irvin makes a couple of free throws.
I mean, and Nikita Wilson makes that 14, 15-footer.
Well, he didn't get that shot off in time. But yeah, if he'd have got it off a half second earlier, and that Final Four was in New Orleans. So who knows what Dale could have done at a Final Four in New Orleans. But, you know, people forget. Yeah, LSU had a 12-point lead late in that game against Indiana. But, you know, it wasn't all coaching. Bobby Knight got a lucky break when Fess Irvin missed those free throws. And then, you know, when Keith Smart hit the game-winning shot for Indiana to win the title that year, that wasn't a drawn-up play.
Okay, so
just got a rebound and threw it up.
Before we went down that hole into the past we were talking about the comparison between LSU and Kentucky in the 80s.
Right. Sorry.
Versus what
right.
LSU's doing, women are doing against South Carolina
exactly.
Right now. Reminds you of that. So how do you think it could end up?
Because the women have come close to beating South Carolina twice now. They've come close to beating them in the past. And, you know, they just lost to them again in the SEC tournament for the second time this year. So if they get them again, maybe in the national semifinal or in the national championship game, who knows? That's when they might win it. And that would be awesome. That would make up for all those other losses, huh, Andre?
I would think so. I mean, it only takes one time, and if it's in the postseason, that would I would agree with you. I would say that it makes up for all
about three of them at least.
Maybe not all six.
And Andre,
this year for sure.
One of the things you're working on, Andre, is the fact that LSU's best players have not played well when it counts in those two South Carolina losses.
And it's not necessarily that they haven't played well, but it's those two together that haven't played well with each other.
Who's those two?
And those two are Flaje Johnson and Michaela Williams, your two most tenured players that have been at LSU in the past three or four years. So they definitely have to play better as the tournament moves on, because if y'all remember down the stretch, I mean, Angel Reese was a big reason of why LSU won games in the tournament in 23. But it also came from their other veterans. It came from LaDeja Williams. It came from Alexis Morris, right? And they're going to need big games from all their stars, which the way that Mylesia Fulwiley is playing right now, I have no doubt in my mind that she's going to be able to keep it up. But LSU's going to be able to have – they're going to have to be able to get big games from especially Michaela Williams, at least one of those two, because if both of those two are having kind of an off game, it shows you what happened on Sunday. They just can't afford to both have bad games like that, and especially on a consistent basis, because, and like I said, in four of their five losses this year, they have failed to both put up 20 points or more, or 15 points or more.
Those are good points, and I cannot wait to talk to all you guys and, of course, Reed Darcy about it, because I got some loaded questions for him about how this team is, not just those two, but this team is performing in clutch moments all season long, and certainly against South Carolina. But I will say this. I actually think that this LSU women's basketball roster is more talented than South Carolina's roster.
I would agree with that. And not only that, but it gives them, say it gives the Flaje Johnsons and the Michaela Williams a little more margin for error because of that depth. But my thing is that you cannot be so bad to the point where you're kind of rotting on the bench, which is, at one point, Kim just kind of let Michaela go, not Michaela on the bench, but she benched Flaje for a good bit. And in big games like that, you cannot have your senior guard on the bench, especially in a game like the South Carolina game where she scored 21 points against in the last matchup. So you can't have that inconsistency going into March. You have to find, I guess, a medium there where it works between all three of your guards.
Yeah, I think to quote the great Skip Bertman, against South Carolina, LSU has to get through that pressure barrier. That's what Skip used to talk about a lot. LSU's been getting to that point, but they haven't quite gotten through it. And maybe they'll get one more chance in a huge game. And I think it's funny. I mean, you can't really point to any coaching issues.
No,
with Kim any of the losses. And even though you're saying she has better players, but they just haven't performed up to snuff. And really, there's only, I don't think you can, the only criticism I ever remember of Kim was when she lost to Iowa in the Elite Eight. She didn't maybe put her best player on Caitlin, or she didn't switch around enough. But it was, it was kind of six of one, half dozen the other. You don't really know. But, it's rarely, if ever, coaching with Kim. So it's just a pressure barrier.
And in fact, in this game against South Carolina, they were in it, all the way through it. Late, still had a chance. Unlike last game during the regular season against South Carolina, where Flaje missed two key free throws with 45 seconds to go, this time Kim burns her last time out, gives them instructions, and they go out on the court, and they don't follow any of the instructions, press, foul, anything that she said to do.
Right.
Yeah, at least that's what she described.
Right, right. Okay, we're gonna have to take our first break, and we're going to come back shortly with Kendall Rogers of D1 Baseball. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo and Todd Horn and Andre Champagne with Tiger Rag.
Luke. Just call him Luke. Luke.
And we're joined by Kendall Rogers of D1 Baseball. Kendall, how are you tonight?
I'm doing all right. I'm here to comfort you guys a little bit.
Yeah, I want to know what you've done with the LSU baseball team.
Man, I'll tell you what, it is weird. You know, we talk about it so much in sports about the team, you know, after the national championship team. And, you know, unfortunately, I do think this club is going to be fine long term. I mean, you know, it's not just because I'm on the show, but like I just kind of am a believer in LSU baseball. Like I just feel like they'll figure things out. But there's no doubt there are some warning signs. I mean, this is a team that, you know, we go back to even last or 2 weeks ago, or I guess it was last, you know, early last week. You know, the Northeastern game, I'll give you the mulligan because it's a long weekend. You're playing a scrappy Northeastern team on a Monday. They really need the RPI win. But then you go to Louisiana, Lafayette, and then you play the way you did. So after that, you're thinking, okay, two stinkers in a row. Man, this team's going to be on fire. Well, they come out on fire on Friday, and then it's like we're back to the same team the rest of the weekend. So, you know, I don't know what the answer is. I thought they were kind of over it a little bit on Friday. But, you know, the only thing I'll say, and trust me, I didn't think they played well at all in either of the last two games of that series. But the one thing I will say that maybe is a silver lining is I don't know what the total number was, but it felt like the number of balls that they hit on the screws in that last game were a lot. Like, I thought they had a lot of hard contact. So that tells me that eventually those hits will start falling in. But, I mean, again, there are some serious warning signs with the actual, I say, makeup of this team right now.
Yeah, Kendall, let me ask you about 2024, because the same kind of thing happened. I remember thinking, oh, they lost a couple of games, they'll be fine. But I think what's better about this team is their three weekend starting pitchers, Evans, Cooper, and William Schmidt. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that? You think this starting pitching is better than 24?
No, I definitely would agree. You know, the thing about it is Moore and Schmidt have been pretty good. You know, Kaysen over the weekend was really good. 9 strikeouts, no walks. That's a big step forward. So, you know, you're led to this question, okay, the pitching, at least the starting pitching, is coming into form. When will the rest of the team kind of follow suit? And, again, I look at, you know, up and down this lineup, and, you know, I look at guys that, you know, just don't have great numbers right now, and I'm like, I can't imagine that fits. You know, you're looking at, you know, Stephen Milam hitting 250. Seth Dardar, certainly a well-accomplished hitter, hitting 256 after the year he had at K-State last year. You know, Aaron Beedy. Aaron Beedy has gotten a lot of heat. He hasn't been great behind the plate, and he hasn't been great at the plate at times. And so that's a guy for me, I think, for LSU. He's supremely talented. But for LSU to get where it wants to get at the end of the year, which is Omaha National Championship, he's going to have to be the guy for me that is going to have to take a big step forward as the season progresses.
Kendall, if you take a couple steps back and look at more of an airplane overview of just what all the baseball that you've watched through the years, could this be as simple or close to as simple as the teams that they've played are not all that great and their pitching is subpar and LSU is used to playing against teams that have better pitchers, and when they get against higher caliber competition with better pitching, they may perform better or break out of it?
Now, that's one way to look at it. You know, I guess it is. I mean, it could honestly, you know, I'm joking more than anything, but it honestly could be as simple as once they get into conference play, they kind of know they have to do it a little bit. You know, the thing about SEC teams, and again, I'm not trying to make excuses for SEC teams, but if you do well in the SEC, like, honest to God, like, it doesn't matter what you even do in the first 2 weeks of season.
No
question.
As long
as you do well in conference, that's all that matters. So I will say this. As of right now, I am not terribly concerned about LSU, but I will tell you this. If they go to Nashville this weekend with the same energy, making the same mistakes, the killer instinct isn't there, I will have alarm bells sounding. I do think that would be very disturbing if you're an LSU fan. If the first week in a conference, going against Vanderbilt, a team that certainly LSU and Vandy have had their big bouts over the years, like if that doesn't get you going, I don't know what does.
Well, you talk about LSU's struggles. Vandy's had their share of struggles as well so far, like 10-7 right now.
Yeah, right now it could be one of those things where it's like an arm wrestling match between two really weak armed people or something, where like neither team can really do anything right, but they're both really talented. I think the big key is, you know, for Vanderbilt is, I just haven't loved their starting pitching. I do like some of their offensive pieces, Colin Barzy. Assuming he's healthy and playing this weekend, he's a powerful guy. Braden Holcomb, powerful guy. So, I mean, there's a lot of parallels there. I think LSU's upside's a lot higher than Vanderbilt's, but it's two teams with a lot of talent that just, you know, so far, you know, it just hasn't panned out. The one thing I will say for LSU that I cannot say for Vanderbilt is Vanderbilt has not had a weekend this year where you're like, man, they're really good. I mean, even Globe Life opening weekend when I saw Vandy, you know, Colin Barzy went off, but they didn't look very good. LSU, the thing I keep going back to with LSU is the offense was really good in Jacksonville against UCF, who I think is going to be in a contention for regional spot, and against Notre Dame, a team we're finding out is pretty good. So that is the one weekend that gives me a lot of hope that this team's going to take a big step forward.
Well, Kendall, before we let you go, just curious, where are you at this weekend?
I will be here locally, actually a Big 12 series. I might hit one game of Ole Miss, Texas. I'm also going to see Kansas State and Houston here locally. K-State's D. Kennedy, one of the top hitters in college baseball. I want to say last week or 2 weeks ago, he had three home runs in a game, including a grand slam. That's the one thing, guys, I would say to kind of keep an eye on as we get into SEC play or the home run numbers. I feel like, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I kind of feel like you're seeing more of those explosive home runs that you saw 2 years ago. I don't think we saw it near as much last year. But it feels like this year, man, there's been a lot of power generation. I don't know if it's the weather, it's been a little bit warmer than usual or what, but that's kind of what I'm keeping an eye on, not only in the SEC this weekend, but also ACC, Big 12, et cetera.
All right, Kendall, thanks a lot for your time. And have a good weekend.
Good night.
All right, buddy. We'll keep up with you.
Bye.
All right. We'll be back with more Tiger Egg Radio and Rudy Macklin right after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit LAFarmBureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
How you doing? This is Snoop Dogg.
Tiger Rag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuned in.
Talk LSU sports, interviews, opinions, and your calls around the Tiger Nation.
Baton Rouge was a life for me, home of the LSU Tigers.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
Hey, we love to score and get highlights and championships and play to win.
Tiger Rag Radio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, Todd Horn, Andre Champagne from Tiger Rag, and we're now joined by three-time first-team All-SEC and All-American SEC Player of the Year 1981, Rudy Macklin. Rudy, thanks for joining us, pal.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Rudy, it's Todd. We're going to talk about 1981 in a little while, but we got to address the elephant in the room right now. I mean, LSU's got one more game in the SEC tournament, probably. Maybe they'll have more, but more than likely against Kentucky on Wednesday morning at 11, tomorrow morning at 11:30. It may be Matt McMahon's last game as LSU head coach, at least if the fans get their way. The sentiment seems to be strongly on the fan side that they want him gone because there's just no energy in the program right now, according to the fan base collectively. But my point is that LSU is not in a financial situation to buy out another coach and another coaching staff and pay a buyout potentially for a new coach. That's dead money. But aside from the financial issues, Matt McMahon had to take over a program from one of the popular choices to replace him, Will Wade, who basically destroyed the program. And Matt McMahon was hired to stabilize the program. And my question to you is, has he done it, and is he getting a fair shake right now?
Well, from day one, the odds were against him. Immediately, what Will Wade had done to the program, it put the school on probation for a number of years. And that meant he couldn't contact any players. He couldn't recruit any players. He actually had to put together a team in 30 days when he first took the job. Because my first question to him when I first met him was, why did you take this job? And when it comes to recruiting itself, the first day LSU went on vacation, all five-star and four-star recruits, they talk to one another in all-star games, AAU tournaments. They all talk to one another and say, hey, what do you think about LSU? Or what do you think about this school? And they said, no, I don't want to go there because they're going to be on probation. That means they're not going to be on TV. They're not going to be on the tournament, in the tournaments. And so the reputation of the school was killed that day. Now, fast forward to what Coach McMahon has done. Yes, he has stabilized the program with players. But when he came off probation, they did not give him the amount of nil money he needed to go into the portal to get the type of players he should have in order to bring the program back to the glory days of Dale Brown. And so that made it tough for him. Then he had his top players get injured. And so if you're going to bring the reputation back to the school itself, sometimes you have to bring in another coach with a big reputation. Well, LSU probably don't have the money to do that. And so if you want to get to where it was back when I played, you got to find a male version of a Kim Mulkey. Do they want to pay that kind of money? You pay big money to get a football coach. We understand that. You pay big money to get the women's basketball coach, to me, the best in the country, Kim Mulkey. You pay good money to get a baseball coach. So are you going to pay good money to get a good basketball coach? Basketball is like the short end of the stick. You know, in order to boost the reputation of the school, you need a spark. You need a big-time reputation coach to come in. You got to pay for him. And as far as McMahon, he stabilized the program, yes, and it may be the best interest of the school to release him in order to get a big name, but can they afford a big name?
Yeah.
And so back when I played with the Knicks, Hubie Brown told me, in this business, we don't worry about feelings, okay?
Mm-hmm. So, Rudy, let me ask you that about sparking the program. This is just a question, all right? Obviously, it would be great if you had all the money in the world, which LSU doesn't right now, to bite off that dead money. That money that's dead means it's buyout money, and it can't be used to stimulate the program. It's sitting there as a debt that you have to pay for, right? So that money is going to be more stabilized at this time next year. McMahon has got possibly, you don't know what's going to happen in the portal, but possibly five key players, core players that could come back, including Dedan Thomas and Jalen Reed. Why not just give him additional money so he's got the same type of roster development money that the other SEC schools have? And what do you have to lose?
Because most of the fans, as you said earlier, as well as alumni and the administration, they're in a we need to win now moment. Okay? So it may be the best thing for them to let him go and bring in a big name if they can afford it, because you need that spark. I like this coach. I like McMahon, really, I do. But he came at a time when the reputation is down and you need a spark. And that spark is a big name coach to start over to get the attention of the recruits across the country. And but if LSU had the money to do that, then yes, business-wise, you should go after a big name coach. But since they do not have the money to do that, you know, stay with him another year to see if he can do it.
Hey, Rudy, would you mind staying with us through the break? Come back with us?
Sure.
Okay, we still got a little bit of time here on this. How late in the game is it right now? I mean, I thought that if they were going to fire McMahon, they would have done it a couple of weeks ago and then start looking for a coach. If they do decide to let McMahon go, is it too late in the game to find the right coach, or how do you feel about that?
I thought about that same question the other day. And just the other day, I'm like, I think they may have waited too late.
Yeah.
To let him go.
Because the portal opens on April 7th, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I think they may have waited too late because they could have got a jump start on that, you know, those players coming in the portal and who was available and to go after them. And so it may be to the point where they don't have the money to go after the big name coach, and they waited too late to jump to let him go. So they may have to stay with him.
Yeah, I think just from listening to you two guys talk, the best thing might be to give him a decent amount of money to get out of the cellar in roster payments, roster purchases, to give him a chance, get him some better players. And if he doesn't win next year, then next year you probably will have more money, and then you can go hire that big coach. But we'll continue this conversation with Rudy Macklin with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Let's go! Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
All right, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. We're with Rudy Macklin. Go ahead, Ty.
Hey, Rudy, just to pick up where we left off really quick, you ideally, maybe too late right now, as we were just discussing, but you would like them to be able to bring a big spark in, like a Kim Mulkey-type hire or a Lane Kiffin-type hire. May not be able to do that, but what provides that spark more, a big-name coach or winning?
Oh, man. If he can, but there's no guarantee.
Right, no guarantee.
There's no guarantee. As far as him winning, if we did give him another year, but having a big name coach come in, he comes in with a lot of fanfare and a lot of players across the country, the top players in the portal and in the AAU circuits, all will know who this person is, and they'll gravitate to him the same way they gravitate to Lane Kiffin and Kim Mulkey. But because LSU's in this predicament of not having the money and to pay for a big name coach like that, and they waited really too late to me now to let him go, then give him that one more year and the Neil money to go after the players and see what he could do in this one year.
Yeah, that would be fair.
I think that would be fair to me because he deserves it after what he'd been through from the beginning. My heart goes out to him, you know, and the reputation was immediately destroyed day one when LSU went on probation.
Right.
Day one, it was destroyed. And all the top players live off reputations. The top players gravitate toward great basketball powers with reputations. LSU's was destroyed. And now they got to get it back. But the predicament they're in, one more year with him and give him the funds he needs to get out there and get those top players to bring, because he knows what he's doing. He knows the X's and O's. He executes well out there. The players play hard for him. He just don't have the talent.
Yeah.
And let him get the talent for this year. Come one more year and see what he could do.
Yeah, he only needs like a couple of them, man. But, well, speaking of that, let's talk about when it was great. when you were playing at LSU, Rudy, I was a freshman at LSU in 79-80, and Todd was there right after. And the atmosphere in that building, man, what was it like as a player just walking out into the PMAC as a player with Daddy Dale in those great years?
It made it even – it was so special because when I came in 76, that crowd wasn't there. It was probably like the crowd like it is now, but less. Okay, it was less even back then, and to have that crowd come out that my sophomore year when we had beat Kentucky when they were number one, and it was amazing to see. I mean, they were holding up fingers for tickets outside, people wanting tickets, and it was ticket scalping going on at that time, and the fire marshals were like turning a blind eye to people who sat in the steps and aisles, you know. And it was like Ole Miss was sold out. Okay, Ole Miss, you sell out for Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I mean, it was just amazing, man, to see a packed house every time out, and every time somebody shoot a jump shot and hit, you hear the crowd go whoop, and you just love that kind of stuff, man. And when you dunk the ball, the crowd goes crazy. And we had the front row lunatics. Remember those guys?
Oh yeah,
the front row lunatics is up front, man, and it was just amazing atmosphere to see it transform from that football school, you know, to a basketball power. Okay, we were it then. Okay, football was kind of lagging a little bit.
Sure.
And basketball had taken over, and that was a beautiful thing. And it went statewide. Everybody became a Tiger fan statewide, and that's a beautiful thing. Beautiful thing.
And you won the two games in the Superdome to get to the Final Four. You had two great games. What was that atmosphere like? Did they bring the Assembly Center with them to the Dome?
Oh, they brought everybody. I mean, they brought not only the Assembly Center, man, they brought it from other schools. It was amazing. Other universities, when they talk about LSU, whether you went to ULL or McNeese or Nichols, whenever they talk about LSU basketball, they say, well, you know, all we have to do is win this game. Oh, you a we now? You part of LSU now? Everybody used the word we, okay? And so that was a beautiful thing. And so to have, you know, 40,000, 50,000, I think it was in the Dome, you know, to watch a game, a basketball game, was beautiful, man. And it was about the journey. You know, it was all about the journey than the destination.
So, Rudy, you mentioned that when you got here in 76, it was dead, relatively speaking. How did they build the program? How did Dale build the program? Y'all had great players.
He was not a big name head coach when he got there either.
Exactly. It was amazing because when he recruited me, we sat in Shawnee Park where I learned how to play in a famous summer league tournament, how we were going to build the program. He and I together. And we spent 2.5 hours talking about the type of style we were going to play and the new guys he brought in to build around me. Okay, I was the focal point.
Right.
And he talked about this guy named Greg Cook.
Yeah.
He talked about this guy named Jordy Oberg, right? And he talked about we had Kenny Higgs there. He said, I need one guy that can come in and make an impact right away. And he said, I'm building this around you. And he said, if you go to any of those other basketball powers, they're going to do well whether you go or not. He said, but if you come to LSU, you can always say you built something. And I came on that promise alone. And when I came with those guys, the three freshmen, myself, Jordy, and Greg Cook, and we started playing together, we knew we had something special. But it also opened the eyes of recruits across the country. When the other recruits saw that I took the chance to come to LSU, a football school, a coach with a losing season, they said, LSU must be okay. And so they said, yeah, come on, let's go. Rudy Macklin came. We need to go. And it gave him his first winning season. I think we went 15-12. And we were close to getting into the NIT, but we had something to build on, and they were able to recruit. But he changed the style of play. He had gotten rid of some guys a year before, brought us in, changed the style of play, went to an aggressive, you know, defense and running the basketball. He wanted to run the ball, and he knew then he had something to build on.
Well, Rudy, thanks for coming to LSU and staying in Baton Rouge all these years and working for the state. And thanks for joining us tonight, man. Great appearance.
Oh, thank you so much. And I enjoy reliving those memories because it's something I can cherish forever. Thank you all.
Well, we enjoyed it. Thank you, Rudy. And we'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Thanks, Rudy.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo and Todd Horn and Andre Champagne from Tiger Rag. And listen, you can listen to this whole show wherever you listen to your favorite podcast or on YouTube shortly after the show ends. You can also get it on the Tiger Rag site and go back and listen to that great interview with Rudy Macklin. Those are some heady times, man, when he was playing for the Tigers. And you know, he was like a fifth-year senior in 80-81 because I think he got hurt one year and missed the whole year. And so, yeah, they weren't great when he first got here, but they built and got better each year. So go back and listen to that. But he made some great points about Matt McMahon, too, because, you know, it wouldn't be right to bring in a new coach and then suddenly give him all the money for the roster. Because, I mean, every year McMahon's been here, he's been at the bottom for the roster money in the SEC, and he's been at the bottom of the SEC most of the time in the standings. So it's not hard to figure that out. So give him a little more, give him significantly more money, let him bring in some great players to go with DJ and Jalen Reed and Jalen Reese, who's really coming around, and Robert Miller III is developing. You know, there's the makings there of a team. But Todd Horn wrote a great column early this week about the Matt McMahon situation that exploded on the metrics and social media and so forth. And since then, several donors and LSU people have been talking to Todd. And Todd, what are you hearing from them about Matt McMahon's status?
Well, you know, I'm going to equate it to what Rudy said. He said buzz. Everybody wants to build the energy back into the program, and everybody realizes this is not the old days. And the old days were just last year when come in and pump money into the program and turn around. They can't afford the buyout right now, and the alumni and the donors especially know that.
I think they could get the buyout, but they can't get the buyout and the new coach and the new roster.
Right, but the problem is, even with the buyouts, okay, is that goes on your debt right now. So we know it would cost them like $20 million minimum in dead money, you know, eight for Matt, his staff, the buyouts for Will Wade or whoever the coach
would be. That's what Verge told us. But what you're telling me is that the donors are also not ready to do it.
Well, I'm not saying they're not ready to do it. They realize the impracticality of it. And the most important thing is those dollars, that debt, hits the books right away. So LSU's already looking at a $30 million deficit, possibly $35 million deficit right now from the Brian Kelly shenanigans. But that would immediately put it to $55 million. Okay, and so the donors realize that they want the buzz, and they would love to have, believe it or not, the buzz of a Will Wade come back, because he won here. He had the buzz. Now it's he's kind of grown in folklore as to how he won. He only really won one SEC championship and went to one Sweet 16.
It got worse each year.
Yeah, but they were in the top five every year of the SEC. But he's demanding $15 million for his roster. So they can't, why spend at least $20 million to spend another $15 million so you get a high caliber roster in when you have a coach right now who, with that same $15 million roster, would be able to compete in the SEC because he'd have the talent to do it.
Right, and that's what they need to do. Maybe right. not $15 million, but they need to up the money and give him a better chance, I think. But yeah,
one last thing on what the – so they're talking about Will Wade, but they're not seriously talking about approaching him. That's what I'm gathering right now.
Okay, we got to take a break. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.